helpless. That is most of the population in different countries crying out for difference. But what is happening? They're being ignored by those who are supposed to be governing and those who are supposed to be leading. So we, the population, are helpless. Yes, Buffy. Big birds fly across the skies, growing shadows on our lives. Leave us helpless, helpless, helpless.
I pray for a day like today, bright and shining, so glory. Everyone with a flag and a smile on their face, Lordy Daddy of every creed and race, Lord.
Phenomenal, lovely atmosphere.
If the Lord is our shepherd, who shall be fear?
No one.
Aye, the party starts.
Yes, the party starts down here at CKUW 95.9 FM on your dial at 515 Portage Avenue, University of Winnipeg, 4.5 floor. Wickedness, badness, niceness, sweetness. We're going right up until 8 a.m. this morning when we'll make way for the wooden spoon that is coming to a place soon to spank you on the balloon. Look out, look out. MJ, we'll wait for you. In the meantime, Fantastic Friday with Ras Rikoi, Prince Ogona, Princess Tim Solom, Queen Victoria, Dr. T, and John, who's here but never here. And you know what? We blasted it right up until 8 a.m. this morning. Usually at the top of the hour, editorially, Princess Rachel, and always from the beginning to the end, Princess K, making sure we keep things going our way.
We don't need no more confusion, no. Oh, no. The people of the station. Hey, we don't need no more illusion, no. Oh no. We the people of the station. We don't need no more deception, no. Oh no. We the people of the station. We don't need no segregation, no.
Manuela, and you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. And the radio show name is called Fantastic Friday. Please come and join us every single Friday morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. every Friday morning.
Lakota lullaby, putting the baby to sleep, putting the group to sleep, the nation to sleep, escaping the terror of colonization. Yeah.
It's been hard to stay silent with all that's going on. In my mind, I get it. I hear what's being said from all corners of our earth. I get it when you're controlled by what you're thinking. In our heads, we hear, if you fight me, I'll fight you harder. If you curse me, I'll curse you and yours even stronger. That is how our mind thinks, speaking without listening to the spirit. It is a mind that is not connected to the soul. The spirit knows that fighting harder, cursing stronger, hating longer will never end. It just gets easier to use a knife, a gun, a drone, or a bomb. All in the name for the name of blood spilled on the ground to leave more lives buried in the ground, never reaching higher ground. To any of the leaders that feel that this is the only way, I ask you to be brave enough to say in your way is a way to World War III. Am I the only one that sees this? I stand up with peace. I stand up with love. That's who I am. That is what God made me of. I stand down on war, and I stand down on hate. We cannot let revenge be our unimaginable fate.
That's Stevie Wonder, and that is we, Fantastic Friday, standing in that corner to stop all this slaughter. Heal the eye, Stevie Wonder. That is what friends are for.
I should ever go away. Well, then close your eyes and try. Feel the way we do today. And then if you can remember, keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you.
Friends and family.
Well, then close your eyes.
We have to demonstrate
and
that continuously.
Words are coming from my heart. And then if you can remember, oh, keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure.
Stevie Wonder.
Hey everyone, I'm Jess Turner. Make sure you listen to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9 FM every Friday morning, 6 a.m. till 8 a.m. That's way too early for me. Okay, thanks. Bye.
When the night come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see. No, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me. So darling,
should tumble and fall, or the mountain should crumble to the sea. Just as long as you stand by me. And darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand now. Stand by me. Stand by me.
As long as you stand by me, we could be undefeatable.
نادي أولادها وصورة أمجاد أجدادها يرجع تاريخها وأمجادها والعزة الغزة وأولادها يا فلسطيني قاوم يا فلسطيني دافع يا حنظل اصمت ضد الصهيوني الغاصب قاوم دافع
فلسطيني قام ناضل.
Hi, I'm Julian Cooper. You're listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. This is my favorite morning wake-up show.
Making sure that we devour all the pathways to getting you beautiful sounds. Fantastic Friday.
City dwellers, my storytellers, my soundscapers, music makers, and my dreamers of dreams. This is for the beat layers, the street sayers, the graph writers, and the painters. This is for the crate keepers, the image freezers, the lens seekers, and the photogs. This is for the spinners, the rewinders, drop the needle, pull it back, and come againers. This is for the movers, the body users, the kinetic acrobatic defying gravity provers. This is for the filmmakers, the actors, the activators, my sculptors, and my can sprayers. This is for the da-da-dubbers, the dancers, the scribers, the scholars. This is for the freestylers, my improvisers, my poetical, lyrical, spiritual vocalizers. This is for my speechifiers, for the visionaries, for the bridge builders, the chain breakers, the power takers. This is for the door crashers, my drum beaters, the call to action taker to the streeters. For my behind the sceners, my planners, my finders, our on task and right on timers. For our organizers, our survivors, our motivators, and our strivers. This is for the uplifters and the uplifters. rises. This is for you, our ancestors. This is for you, our people blessers, our children, for our vision, for our villages, our hoods, our nations, our truths. This is for our culture, for our generation. This is for our creator and our creation. This is for our inner being and our outer, for our say it louder, big and prouder. This is for the art, for the word. This is for the sound. This is for the power.
Hello, this is Mahmood from CKUW with Fantastic Friday. I wish you to tune in every Friday to wish yourself a fantastic Friday, because it's an awesome day and you should go.
My life.
Hello, hey Joe.
Lady Mama.
You wanna give it a go?
Black voices, Lady Mama Lady. Lady Mama Lady.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Moulin Rouge. Where's all my soul sisters? Let me hear your flow, sisters.
Hey, sister, go, sister, soul, sister, flow, sister. Oh.
Hey,
hey. Boys drank all that magnolia wine. All her blacks and jeets waist on free. Gitchy, gitchy, ya, ya, da, 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 da. Gitchy, gitchy, ya, ya, here. Oh, yeah, yeah. Mocha, chocolate, ya, ya. Real thing,
yeah, mama. Out of mercy.
Out of mercy?
watch me now. It name murder me wrote and me no take back me chat. Shuffle the date me and the queen in a the park. Look how me cute and sexy like that. And me plant the con, so no better watch that. Show me step up in a life, them want to give me a fight. Show me look cute and them no look too right. They call on me to over me, man a fight. And that now one, no time in a them life. Me no cut up, I can model every time. Absolute niceness, come with pair rhyme. First class dress code and your style a lick. The quality, my fi come back quick. Cause murder me wrote and me no take back me chat.
Hi everyone, my name is Belaine Osman. I'm a student here at the UW. My students actually call me Madame Oz. Just letting you know, CKUW has an awesome show called Fantastic Friday, and you guys should listen to it. Stay tuned.
Well, here it is. Hey. Come on, man. Come on.
Thank you where you come from. As long as you're a black man.
A black woman or a black child.
No mind your nationality. You have got the identity.
And propensity of an African. Can.
Cause if you come from Clarendon,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Portland,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Westmoreland,
really don't matter. Because coming to you all the way from West Africa in a country called Nigeria is the one they call Prince Ogona to give you news and news from Africa. Prince Ogona. Prince Ogona.
Yes,
Prince Ogona.
Yes, good morning, Vashuko. Good morning to all of our listeners. Unu kedui kekwanu, greetings from Africa.
Africa, Kwenu.
Kwezwenu. Today's first piece comes from Democracy Now! And we spoke with Jerusalem-based journalist and author Nathan Trowell, who was recently awarded the 2024 Pulitzer Prize for general nonfiction for his book A Day in the Life of Abed Salama, Anatomy of a Jerusalem Tragedy.
These conversations are premised on the notion that Israel eventually has to choose. It has to either give the millions of Palestinians living under its control without basic civil rights. It has to give them either citizenship with equality or statehood. And so many people in the diplomatic community would like to have, as they have been having for decades, debates about what a two-state outcome should look like, whether there should be two states or one state or confederation or what have you. And all of that is an enormous distraction from the reality on the ground, because the fact is of the matter is Israel does not have to choose between two states and one state. It doesn't have to choose between giving Palestinians sovereignty or citizenship. It has a third option, which is to continue on the path that it's going down. The path that it's going down is a slow de facto annexation of the West Bank, an absorption of the West Bank settlements in Area C, a takeover of Palestinian land, and a constriction of Palestinians into small, walled-off or fenced-off communities like the town of Annata, where my book takes place, or like Gaza. And so rather than focusing on the reality, which is a movement in the opposite direction of either two states or equality in one state, but rather a deepening of the system of control that leading human rights organizations like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch and the UN Human Rights Council and Al-Haq and B'Tselem have all described as a system of apartheid, rather than addressing that system, Israel would very much like for everybody to debate what would be the ideal outcome. What is the future utopia that we would all like? And let's only address this structural inequality, this systematic domination, once we've all agreed that we've landed on the right perfect outcome.
The second piece, also from Democracy Now!, talks about Salama's son, 5-year-old Milad, who was killed in a fiery bus crash during a school field trip to a theme park. The author of the book hopes the book will make some changes and help us as Palestinians to live our lives as other people around the world.
My son Milad, he was only 5 years old. He was a cute boy, a cool boy, funny boy, loved the life. So the day before the accident, in the night, he said, "Father, I want to buy some sweets and chocolates for my trip. It is the first trip with the school." So I took him to a grocery around supermarket, and he buy his things and the favorite chocolate, Kinder Kids and juice. And then we go back home. He was very excited to join his friends in the journey, in the trip. So we got to sleep earlier. Next day, I was planning to go to Jericho for a business with my cousin. The weather in the morning was very stormy. So I got up. I didn't see Milad when his mother prepared him and put him in the bus in the car to the school. So after an hour, my cousin came and we took his car in our way to Jericho. Then I received a phone call from my nephew. He asked me if Milad in the bus, Nurul Huda school, in the bus to the trip. I said, I told him, yes, he's there. He said, "Uncle, there's an accident in Jaba Road. The bus is crashed." So we changed our way from Jericho to Jaba Road in that stormy weather. When we arrived before the accident, on the place of the accident, before there is a military Israeli military checkpoint, they closed the street before. They didn't allow us to pass with the car. So I jumped out of the car and start running to the place of the accident. In my way up, you know, it's raining and stormy weather, military jeep passed on me. So I wanted to stop them to take me with them. They didn't take me. So I continue my way to the place of the accident, running uphill. So when I received there, there was nothing, only I saw the bus crashed in the side and a big trailer on the other side of the street. So I started asking about what happened to the kids, where are the kids? Everyone, there was many, many people around. There was only one fire truck. I didn't see any ambulances at that time. I saw only civilian police officer from the PA. So the main thing at that time, I wanted to know what happened to the kids. Where are they? And start searching. I'd asking, where are they? Where is the kids? So somebody told me that they took them to, some of them took to Hadassah Ein Karim Hospital in East Jerusalem. Others told me they took them to military space, Israeli military space in around. And others told me maybe they took them to the hospital in Ramallah. So I asked, I met two guys from Jenin. I asked them to take me to Ramallah Hospital. They are strangers, I didn't know them. They allowed to take me. Then they took me to the hospital. When I arrived there, it was very crowded. Many, many people there. The parents of the victims and police and ambulances, media. It was very, very crowded. And I start to search in the building of the hospital. So I asked the doctor who is in the reception about I'm looking for my son Milad. He was in the accident. When she looked at the list, she didn't find his name. She told me his name is not in the list of in this bus. So I started to search in the hospital rooms. I didn't find him. I met other parents who are from our neighborhood. I know him. They already find their kids. They was injured, and I asked them if they say if they saw my son or their sons know anything about Milad. Everybody was busy in his own case, so everybody said no. We didn't find him. So here. I started to search where to search. I searched again in the same hospital. I didn't find him. Then somebody told me maybe they took him to Hadassah in Kerem Hospital in East Jerusalem. I didn't have a permit to pass the checkpoints to Jerusalem. They didn't allow to us to pass because I have a green ID, Palestinian ID. So I called a cousin of mine who have blue ID and asked him to search in Hadassah in Kerem. After maybe 1 hour, 2 hours, he called me back. He said, I searched all the hospital there. Milad is not there. So after 6 or 7 hours, everyone from the parents find his son injured or safe, except me and six families. So a doctor from there came to me and he said, you didn't find your son yet, and we have to take some blood from you to make a DNA test. I asked him why. He said, we have six bodies for small children and the body of the teacher. Burned. So he asked me also to call my wife and my son Adam to come to the hospital to take blood from them for the test, DNA test. I called them. It took more than an hour to receive to the hospital. So they took a blood from us. My wife was shocked. I was crying, but at the same time I was looking at her face and my Adam's face. They was shocked. She didn't cry until now. I think she's still in shock.
This next piece is also from Democracy Now, and we speak to Ahmed Abofol, who notes the significance of the World Court ruling, but decries Israel's complete disregard for international orders, including previous ICJ rulings this year.
The court basically ruled that Israel must halt its military offensive on Rafah and any other acts that might endanger the Palestinian people as a group and their rights under the Genocide Convention. But the court also ruled that Israel must keep the Rafah crossing open and must allow all investigative bodies and commission of inquiries mandated by the UN to enter the territory and investigate alleged Genocide Convention violations and crimes and genocidal acts that may have been committed. And the court also ordered Israel to report to it after 1 month on its compliance with this order. It's worth noting that this is the third provisional measures order. In the first one, the court responded to South Africa's request by accepting some of the measures that South Africa requested. In the second one, the court also responded to South Africa's request by calling on Israel to ensure that humanitarian aid will enter the Gaza Strip from land crossings, including the Rafah crossings and other crossings, sending a very important signal to world leaders, especially in the West, that there is no alternative to allowing humanitarian aid by land, not the American PA or any other way, including airdrops. In this provisional measure, as I indicated, we can see the evolution of the court's, let's say, analysis of the situation and the gravity and the deterioration of the situation. So it's important also to note that for every provisional measures request, the court has to assess again whether the court can issue such order. So the fact that the court decided on three different occasions to issue such order, it means that this situation continue to deteriorate, and the Palestinian people as a group in the Gaza Strip are threatened in whole or in part by Israel's military operation, especially in Rafah. Well, some European states, as you indicated, have been saying that this order is binding and Israel must comply with it. Better late than never, this orders have been binding from the first provisional measure order, which some states, in my view, disgracefully tried to ignore or label as unhelpful. But we see also that in the West, in Europe in particular, some states are taking different position than that has been taking in relation to the situation in Palestine, including Spain, Ireland, including also recognizing Palestine, but also Belgium, Norway, and many others. So what we're witnessing now is the emergence of a different opinion in the European continent by states who are saying that this ruling must be complied with, including Germany. I think there was a statement by German officials that this order is binding. The question is how the European Union will ensure that Israel complies with this order. As you and your viewers may already know, international law does not have an enforcement mechanism, and such order is worth what states make of it and how they utilize it to ensure compliance. So the question is, will the European Union and the individual European states continue, for example, their relations with Israel and business as usual, or will we see sanctions on Israel and other repercussions? Of course, it's long overdue for Western states to impose sanctions in Israel, severe diplomatic relations, stop importing Israeli settlements goods, stop exporting arms to the Israeli apartheid regime. Western states in general are complicit in these crimes, especially the U.S., to be honest. The Palestinian victims who are being shattered apart, especially in Rafah, like we saw in the targeting of tents in a designated safe area, were most probably targeted by American weapons. After every order of provisional measures by the ICJ, Israel has in a way, responded in such barbaric way, targeting the Palestinians. Take, for example, the first provisional measures, which the court in which the court relied on UNRWA statements to assess what's going on the ground. Right after that order, Israel accused UNRWA of being involved in the October 7th attack. And several states, including the U.S., rushed to cut funding or suspend funding from UNRWA without even viewing any evidence of such allegations, parroting whatever Israel is saying, in fact lying. And then shortly after, as we know, they restored funding because they found out that Israel is lying. After the second order, which was focused on humanitarian aid and on the danger of famine that the court described as sitting in the Gaza Strip, the Israeli apartheid regime immediately after this order targeted seven workers of the World Center kitchen, killing nationals of several Western states, and claimed that it was a mistake, although the targeting was of several vehicles apart from each other. And the reporting showed that such acts could not possibly be a mistake. After the third order, which is focused on Rafah and the fact that Israel has not provided the court of any convincing arguments or evidence that it has ensured the safe passage of civilians into those designated areas or the basic services needed for the survival of the population who would be moved to that area, the court ordered that Israel must halt its operation. Israel's response was to target civilians in a safe, allegedly designated safe area, and then claimed once again it's a mistake. So I think at this stage, one must not be fool enough to entertain Israel's lies. Israel is lying while we speak. Amy, just now I received the news that Israel has targeted another gathering of tents in Al-Mawasi area, west the Rafah government, where Israel also designated it as a safe area. The preliminary reporting indicates that over 20 persons have been torn apart by this bombing. The preliminary reporting I received is horrific, like that of the targeting on tents that you just mentioned, and the horrific images that we've seen. So I think any allegation that Israel is doing this by mistake is just ridiculous. And at this stage, entertaining such allegations is just in service of Israel's monstrous and barbaric attacks against civilians. Let me also remind you, Amy, of the targeting of Al-Ahli Hospital, when Israel claimed that it wasn't an Israeli rocket. And then after that, we had several investigations, including from Western media outlets, showing that it is, in fact, an Israeli targeting. So what Israel is doing and what Israel was doing since targeting Al-Ahli Hospital is just sensing the pulse, how the international community will react to targeting civilians in a hospital. And unfortunately, the international community has not lived up to the responsibility, has allowed such monstrous acts. And then it continued. We saw how many hospitals have been targeted based on this lies. And this is a deliberate act, Amy, because it's with a genocidal mentality and intent to destroy any safe spot needed for or essential to the survival of the civilian population, and hospitals would be on top of that list.
And the last piece, we spoke with Kenneth Roth about revelations that Israel waged a nearly decade-long campaign to intimidate the International Criminal Court in order to stop possible war crimes, persecutions of Israeli officials.
This is a crime. Karim Khan made that clear. I mean, when he issued that notice that any effort to intimidate or retaliate against prosecutorial staff will be an obstruction of justice, in essence, I thought he was referring to Republican senators who had threatened severe sanctions if Israeli officials are charged. But he clearly also had in mind what the Israeli Mossad had been doing, mainly to his predecessor. Now, what's interesting is the Israelis clearly misjudged Fatou Bensouda. One person is quoted as saying they thought of her as, you know, basically merely black and African, so who cares, as they put it. But she's a tough woman, and she resisted, you know, these threats to her family, a sting operation against her husband. And she didn't have to act at that point because the court authorized the investigation to go forward in February 2021, near the end of Bensouda's term in June 2021. So she could have just sat on it and let Karim Khan, her successor, take over. She didn't. She actually opened the investigation a month later. And so this really speaks to her bravery. This effort backfired. Now, I think the most significant ongoing effect of this, if we think back last week, Antony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State, his main argument against Karim Khan charging Netanyahu and Gallant is what's known as the principle of complementarity. That's a rule under the court statute that the court should defer to genuine good faith national prosecutions. And Blinken basically said, Israel's got a, you know, a sophisticated legal system. Let them handle it. What this shows is that this whole thing is a sham, that the Israeli investigations are not about securing justice. They're about obstructing justice. And we've heard about this for years from B'Tselem, for example, the leading Israeli human rights group that calls these whitewash investigations. You know, whenever there's some incident and there's international outrage, Israel announces an investigation, you then never hear anything further. But the announcement of the investigation pushes things off. They did something very similar with the ICC. They would listen in to what Bensouda or Khan were looking at, and they would say, aha, they're interested in that incident.
They would eavesdrop?
Yes, they would eavesdrop. They would, you know, hack. And they would, so they learned that the ICC prosecutor was interested in an incident, and they would start an investigation. And they would then send somebody into The Hague, to the prosecutor's office, and say, you don't need to look at this. We've got an investigation going. And it sounded as if they were on top of it all. But in fact, these were purely reactive investigations. They were not good faith investigations. And I think that this whole hacking and surveillance and threatening incident gives the lie to Blinken's argument that Karim Khan should defer to Israeli justice efforts. These are not good faith justice efforts. These are cover-up efforts.
And Ken, if you could just put this in the context of, I mean, why would Israel go to such extraordinary lengths to compromise the International Criminal Court? If you could give us some background, because does the International Criminal Court have any enforcement mechanism? What is the symbolic weight of decisions taken by the court? If you could place this in the broader context of what decisions and investigations and prosecutions the ICC has launched and made before, and explain in that context why Israel has done this decade-long attempt to subvert the court's work.
Well, the International Criminal Court is the world's leading war crimes tribunal, in essence. And nobody wants to be charged with war crimes or crimes against humanity, you know, as both Netanyahu and Gallant are about to be done, because the prosecutors requested arrest warrants based on basically starvation charges in Gaza. And you know, no one wants that, first of all, because it means that if you travel to any ICC country, including all of Europe, including in more than 100 governments around the world, they have a duty to arrest you and send you to The Hague for trial. So, you know, there are real consequences, and you can end up in prison. So, you know, nobody wants that. And, you know, that's why Netanyahu was seen as obsessed with this, because, you know, it's not as if what goes on in Gaza or even the West Bank are, you know, low-level operations. These are very much directed from the top. You know, Netanyahu is commander-in-chief. And so he understood